Lottie. I suppose I should just admit that this isn't my first time in Grafton Manor. It's been hard for me not to tell the others every time I notice something familiar. I want to share with someone what I remember about the place. How the chairs in the library were once faced toward the fireplace, or how the dining room used to have drapes in blue crushed velvet that were perfect to wrap yourself up in during a game of hide-and-seek. Other than a few details, I was surprised to see how little had changed. Grafton is preserved like a museum from my past. The help is what they called my mother. There was no mincing words back then. Not that she ever seemed to mind. Cooking and cleaning for a family as rich as the Graftons was not an easy job to come by. Most housekeeping work didn't come with full boarding by the time I was born, so my mother was even more grateful that I was allowed to stay with her in the upstairs room. Not many families would have taken in a single mother and her child in those days. Whenever I was fidgety or misbehaving, she would remind me that we were so lucky to have the Graftons. They were a bit like gods, hidden away in the east wing. All I'm left with are fragments of memories from that time. Some are merely images of my mother in the kitchen, or Betsy holding one of her porcelain dolls. They are disjointed, though I try my hardest to find a thread connecting the memories, turning them this way and that in my mind as though they are puzzle pieces that might suddenly click into place with enough effort. It's hard to make sense of them, though I've tried for nearly 60 years. Laying awake at night, my eyes flicking across the grainy darkness of the ceiling, replaying what little bits I can remember over and over again. Looking for clues. I put one of my pie crusts into the oven to par-bake and begin chopping rhubarb into chunks. I suppress a yawn. That is why I am here, to put myself back into that time, to search for remnants of my mother. For the past 2 nights, I've thrown back the covers and crept out into the hall, trying to retrace her last steps. But it's hard when I have no idea what those were. So I have been spending my nights wandering Grafton, looking for something intangible that will bring me back to the night she disappeared. I make my custard, whipping together sugar, flour, eggs, vanilla, cream, and butter. Betsy comes to my station as I mix the rhubarb with cinnamon and sugar. "I love rhubarb pie," Betsy says. I can see she means it. Nothing better on a summer evening. Of course, I already know that Betsy loves rhubarb. I would spend countless summer afternoons at my mother's side smelling the rhubarb bubble in order to please the young mistress of the house. I smile politely, even though every time she speaks to me, my legs turn to jelly, just as they did when I was a child. I was always a bit afraid of Betsy. She was only a year older than me, but she was a million times more mature. She was already quite a bit taller than I was, and walked around the house like a miniature adult in stiff, buttoned-up dresses and shiny leather shoes. Most of the time, I saw her only in passing, often marching purposefully from the front door up the stairs toward her room in the east wing. Whenever she did see me, if we happened to collide in a hallway or pass each other in the kitchen, she'd frown and tilt her head back, looking down the bridge of her nose at me, a not-so-subtle reminder of who was in charge. Despite our differences, I would occasionally be sent to play with her. Apparently, the Graftons had thought it would be good for Betsy to interact with more children her own age, and I was dispatched to entertain her like an organ grinder's monkey. Not that I minded one bit. To me, these playdates spelled opportunity. Betsy, with her mountains of toys and fancy dresses, was like a princess hidden away in the forbidden east wing. I wished desperately to befriend her. I would convince my mother to dress me in my nicest clothes for those rare occasions. She would go along, putting me into my church dress and braiding my hair with ribbons. Looking back, I wonder what she thought of my attempts to fit in with the lady of the house, knowing as she did that there was no way I would ever be accepted into their fold. The Graftons knew who I was, A poor, plain little girl who they took pity on. Occasionally, I would run into an elder Grafton in the halls of the manor. The mother, Josephina, was stern and imposing. She preferred me to stay out of her sight. And if I somehow didn't, if she caught sight of me in the hall or by the kitchen, she would look at me with her mouth pursed, as though she'd just swallowed buttermilk. Richard Grafton was more of an enigma. If I saw him with Josephina, he would gaze past me, as though he had somewhere he'd rather be. But occasionally, when I would see him on his own, often when I was playing outside and he was coming back from a walk with the dogs or parking one of his cars, he was quite nice to me. He would ask me how I was doing and pay me compliments. These conversations always filled me with anxiety as a child. The truth was, Richard Grafton made me quite uncomfortable. I didn't like the way his eye would focus on me, and I always felt I was disappointing him with my monosyllabic answers, like he expected more. Now Betsy moves on from my baking table, cameras in tow. There was a moment, the first time Stella and I went into the dining room, that I worried about Betsy placing who I was. But I knew as soon as she saw me that she didn't recognize me at all. She practically looked right through me. I always knew it was a possibility, but I figured that after all these years, the chance of her remembering me was slim. Is it odd that after all this time I was almost disappointed? After all, I have never forgotten her. It's been 50 years since I last laid eyes on Betsy Grafton. I bet she's hardly given me a moment's thought. She's a celebrity. And who am I? The daughter of a housekeeper. A little girl she played with from time to time. Nobody. I pull the crust out of the oven, lifting the parchment paper with a load of tiny spherical pie weights. It is a light butter color, firm and already a bit flaky. This will help it keep from getting too soggy with such a wet filling. Now I pile the rhubarb and sugar mixture onto the crust and pour the custard over the top. It froths pleasantly as it fills in the cracks. It will thicken into a true custard studded with craggy bits of tart rhubarb. My mouth waters. Coming back to Grafton after all this time has felt strangely like coming home. After all, it is where my mother raised me, the only real childhood home I ever knew. The last time I spoke to my mother was that night. It was already dark when she came into our room and kissed me on the forehead. I was bleary-eyed, already asleep. She smelled of the outdoors, of crisp leaves and wood smoke. Pale moonlight slanted in through the window, hitting her side where she sat on my bed. Her eyes sparkled. "Things are going to get better for us," she'd said, leaning over me. Her hair was loose and tickled my face as she gave me a kiss. I fell asleep against her, and will never forgive myself for sleeping so deeply, because when I woke up the next morning, she was gone.